now, Tenzin. I just want to be left alone.
But you called me here.
Aang.
You have finally connected with your spiritual self.
How?
When we hit our lowest point, we are open to the greatest change.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. My name is Sam Stanish. We are here to discuss Book 1, Chapter 12 of Legend of Korra. Possibly no longer going to be able to use the term superfan in our intro anymore. But with me, as always, is a man who is going to take time to accept what has happened. Is Derek Grinding?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like superfan, we're allowed to be a little critical. We've been a smidge critical in these last few weeks. There was that one episode we really liked.
That was like 2 months ago.
That counts. Look, you know, I've gone on record saying this is my least favorite finale of the entire franchise. So I'm just glad that we are here to, you know, put it to rest.
I really didn't. I'm so mad that we did this.
No, don't be mad. I feel like you would have like I lived with regret if we had stopped at Avatar and be like, what if? And now you know what if.
I am certainly now aware of what if. And I, you know, I'm looking at the road less traveled by, and I'm kind of like, okay, that road looks kind of nice.
That, you know, I had fun. We had a few giggles along the way. And, you know, how can you put a price on a child's smile?
The creators of Legend of Korra were not asking themselves that because they did not do that.
not make one child smile.
Yeah. Because the other thing that I was thinking about when Survivor was wrapping up was that, or maybe after Avatar, I forget when this was like in my mind, but I was like, well, maybe we could watch Digimon Tamers in, like after Survivor. But then that whole thing happened this week.
Devastating. So it was
sort of like truly nothing good. There were no good options for us.
You know, we could have gotten in there right at the end, you know, could have like rode that controversy, like, whoa. But, you know, separate the art from the artist, what the fuck ever, who cares? Whatever. Yeah. The less we say about Digimon Tamers, the better. You know, from now on, we only stand Terriermon, the version from the movie.
It's going to be hard for me to not stand the Terriermon version from the TV show, but I'll work on it.
Yeah, that's something we're all working on, I think, right now. enough about very specific, very online things. Let's talk about the finale of Book 1 of Legend of Korra. You seem so excited already. Your body language is telling me that you're so ready to go.
Everything sucks. Everything about this episode was bad. It was a bad ending to a bad season, and I really am. I expected to like it more, but I feel like as an adult, I'm only more aware of all of the bad things at play here and how poorly they did structuring a narrative.
Yeah, and I don't know if like pairing this with the last week would have helped at all. Because not really. I mean, 11 and 12 aired back to back, If I remember correctly. And it's just not the show's finest hour. That's for sure. It just feels like they knew where they wanted this book to end, but they just did not set anything up to make it actually make sense or satisfying. Like Amon as a villain, who cares?
They also don't even really defeat him. Like, nothing has changed. But like, and there's true, like, him waterbending in that scene makes zero sense. And it truly is only to serve the populace knowing that he is a waterbender. Like, he could have done literally anything from that spot because he's in a body of water and gotten away, except he does the most dramatic thing possible and makes this gigantic tornado. And it's just like, this is not set up well at all. And like, also, there is still a gigantic building of radical non-benders looking to start a revolt. Like, nothing has been solved. They're just saying that it's over.
But Sam, they stopped the airplanes from taking off.
The city was already under control. They were like, it's nothing. That's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, Amon, who's like been so like two steps ahead this whole time, like knows what he's doing, just has a fit of waterbending rage and has to create the most flashy waterbending move you could ever do. It's just very nonsensical, and like Korra airbending should feel so satisfying, and it doesn't, because what did Tenzin teach her that like came to fruition here? Nothing. She just like punched the air because she was angry.
She also did it seconds after she lost her other powers. So like there was no even real moment where she's like reflecting on the loss of her actual abilities, other than like the 1 second where she's like, Mako, help me, blah blah blah. It's like there's no time or weight given to it, because she immediately starts punching air, and like then she's like the moment where she's like reflecting on no longer being the avatar doesn't even add up anymore, because she's able to bend again. Like that's at the end of the episode where she's like, I'm not the avatar anymore, I can only airbend. It's like, okay babe, well you were born from two waterbenders, so that's still something, and you've been having visions this whole time, so what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense for her character in the sense that it's like she associates being the avatar with bending, obviously, but then that just means she really didn't learn anything over the course of this book, really. Like, it's like, how would she have ever learned anything? I feel like we took so many diversions away from like Tenzin teaching her, which is like the conceit of this book, supposedly. But then we go into the pro bending, and then we go into Amon, and we go into Tarlok, and we just like take all these different little diversions away from like what should have been the actual story, which is Korra learning to airbend
and reflect, like gaining spiritual connection. Like this whole, in order for Korra losing her bending to actually work, like the entire story needs to be restructured. Like Lin should have lost her bending when Tano lost his bending, and then Korra should have lost her bending several episodes ago, like before Lin would have even lost her bending. Like it needed to happen so long ago so that there's like time for her to like have, like the thing that would be powerful is if she gets this spiritual connection while she is not able to bend, and she learns about what being the avatar means while she's completely disconnected from the physical side of it, and like, and it can prove to herself that she can still have a like a place in the world as the avatar disconnected from bending, because currently she loses bending, immediately starts airbending again, and then like 5 minutes of screen time goes by, and she goes and like has this sad moment off by the cliff, and then Aang comes and immediately restores her bending after again. Like you said, like truly nothing was learned at all, and then she immediately knows how to restore everyone else's bending, and she's a master of the Avatar state, all in a 10-minute period of the episode of the finale of the show. And then also like none of the backstory from last week really even has an effect. Truly, all that was needed was that Tarlok saying, Amon is my brother and he's a waterbender and he's a bloodbender. There's nothing else connected from the like backstory. Yakone is completely absent from this episode. The mom from the backstory never gets any add in, like, all of it is genuinely so badly done, and I don't understand how this is possible.
Yeah, it really does feel like they, like, had an outline, but, and they're like, yeah, there's going to be the villain who, like, leads the Equalist Revolution. It just feels like there were too many ideas they had for this one book, and they felt the need to get them all into one. I feel like if you, like, take out Tarlok, then we start, like, there's something there to where, okay, we don't have this little diversion. I feel like you said, Korra losing her bending, like, halfway through the season, or maybe even earlier, and then she's forced to connect to the spiritual side, and there's, like, actual stakes to learning airbending. Like, I just feel like the idea of learning airbending has not been on the show's radar since episode 2 or 3.
Absolutely. I just had, like, full body chills also realizing that if Korra lost her bending earlier, there's, like, an even better way to, like, have her think about the place of non-benders in the world. It's because now she can actually understand what it's like to be a non-bender. It's like, there are so many better ways that this could have been done, and I'm really disappointed. I guess energy bending is now what's allowing her to be able to, like, bring people, like, bring the bending back, but it's like, Katara is there. She's a bloodbender. Like, how is she not able to do this?
Yeah, I don't get that, and I don't understand how she knows Korra is, like, disconnected from the other elements. It's like, it just does not make sense. So much of it is like, but it just, like, happens because they need it to happen, and then they try really hard to, like, cover it up or, like, make it make sense, and it just never does. I just feel like, yeah, you, even outside of, like, just the overall idea, like, there's, like, maybe one, like, moment in this episode that I thought was well done, which is literally towards the end. But we can get there, I guess, if we want to, like, run down the episode chronologically first.
Yeah, that would probably be smart.
Well, we start with, I believe, with essentially Sokka, Suki, Toph taking down the airships part 2.
Like, 100%. It's truly a retread, because there's even the part where Iroh is blowing planes out of the air, and they, like, go into, they do this, they did this, like, twice this season, where, like, they were having an air fight, and the major strategy was having something blow up and having it run into other things that it's, like, near. It's like, what? Just come up with something else. Everybody has magical powers. Just do anything.
Right. Yeah, and it's weird that, like, we always talk about this idea of, like, oh, they didn't know they were getting more seasons every time, and it's like,
miss me with that criticism, with that protection, because that means it should have been good.
Exactly, because it's like, okay, so if this is supposedly could function as a series finale, then why are we spending so much time on Iroh, of all people, this new character we just met 2 episodes ago? Not even, he just was a face. And then, like, why are we separating our characters? Like, Bolin and Mako don't even have, like, a brotherly moment, these, like, two main characters at all.
There's zero resolution to the Asami Mako thing. Bolin is, like, invisible in this entire episode. If this was the series finale, that, like, I would never want to talk about Avatar, like, ever again.
Yeah, it's just very weird that that's, like, the decision to, like, separate everyone off, because it feels like they are, I mean, operating under the assumption that they will have more, which is a fair assumption to have when you are so, like, come on, they had to have some idea, like, Nickelodeon probably wanted more. So I don't think it's, like, I agree, it's weird to be like, well, they didn't know. Like, I guess that explains why each season, like, feels a little more separate, but it doesn't explain why this finale in particular is just not good or very interesting. Because it's like, and then it leaves the world in such a weird position if this is the last we see of the Avatar universe. Because, like you said, there's an entire, this entire city is still taken over by a group of people who have not had any sort of, like, recompense. Like, nothing, like, that they are looking for has been solved. All that happened is their leader was exposed for being a waterbender.
Yeah, and, like, that Korra's plan, like, is stupid. Like, she's like, I'm gonna expose Amon in front of all of his supporters and show them that he's a waterbender, and it's like, okay, but there's, like, clearly there are thousands of people who agree with him. So, like, what are you doing about that?
Yeah, it's and it's funny that they all, like, the entire crowd, like, flees, like, instantly. It feels like they would all kind of, I don't know, like, bum rush the stage, because it's literally just two of them. It just is weird. It's like, okay, so do these people not actually care? Like, is that the commentary they're trying to make? That's just mob psychology.
And, like, so what if Amon is a waterbender? Like, he's actively taking people's bendings away and is, like, promoting the ideology of the equalist movement. And, like, he is the, like, he's both the figurehead and the actual guy leading it, and, like, has all the power and has figured out how to, like, actually promote these ideas. So it's sort of like, honestly, I don't think that the mustache guy would really care that much if he is a waterbender.
Right, because he's enacting all the things they want to happen.
Yeah. He's only lying about being a waterbender, like, where this ability comes from. Otherwise, he is actively trying to take bending away from the world, which is what they all want, and nobody else is able to do it for them.
Right, and it's funny because I feel like we don't actually know what Amon's end game in quotes really is, because it's like is it like so nefarious that the crime he has is lying, essentially. It's like, okay, but like it's not like he was going to then turn around and like kill everyone that worked for him or like do whatever. Like, he just was going to take everyone's bending away, presumably.
Yeah, like, he's not like a turncoat or whatever the word, it's a double agent where, like, he's somehow working for the Republic Army or anything like that. He is still doing what he said he wants to do.
Right. It's just, yeah. And, like, his whole Amon persona also just doesn't make sense. It's like, why is he afraid people will recognize him as the son of a man that no one remembers, and also they didn't know he even had a son?
Nobody knew that he was alive from the time when he was like 12 years old.
It's very much
plastic surgery exists. Right. So, like, what this was something I thought about a lot when the original run was on. And I was just like, well, they wouldn't have him masked from the viewer for all this time if it wasn't a character that we would recognize, because, like, that would just be stupid. And then they reveal in episode 11 that it's just some guy I've never heard of before. And it's like, oh, then why did it take so long for me to see his face and, like, know who he is?
Right. And it's very much that like Spider-Man panel, I'm pretty sure, where it's like one of his enemies, like, takes off his mask and he's just like, I have no idea who you are. It's very, very that. And I just feel like it's like they wanted a cool guy with a mask, which is fair. That's cool. But then, like, don't make that, like, part of a central mystery about him. Like, I don't know. And I just don't get, like, of course he's going to have, like he's not going to, like, have a story about a disfiguring scar and then not, like, know that, like, there's a chance that he's going to have to show it to someone at some point.
Count Olaf vibes.
There.
I think that they probably worked backwards from this horrible symbolic moment in this episode where the Amon mask slides off Aang's face and then decided to plot the whole season around that happening. I just couldn't, I can't think of a single moment in the first show where such horrible symbolism is at play.
It's like, it doesn't symbolize anything other than, like, just plot events. Like, and who made this gigantic mask? And why wouldn't they just, like, destroy the statue? I feel like it's very silly to construct a gigantic mask. And they're not benders, so it's like, who made this? Was this one of Hiroshi's big projects?
Did they use the blimps to, like, lift it up?
And which also is like, how long has this place been under control? It does not make sense. Speaking of things that don't make sense, the airbenders got captured anyway.
Yeah, when I didn't remember this from when we were talking about it last time, like a couple weeks ago, after Lin sacrificed herself in order to protect them. But it doesn't matter because they were kidnapped off screen.
Yeah, don't know how. And it just, like, completely, I don't know, eliminates any sort of, like, depth to that, or, like, any weight to that moment anymore. Because it was literally for nothing. Which, I mean, it's fine, but, like, at least show us it happening, so it's not just, like, oh, by the way, we need stakes again, so here's this happening. It's very strange. And it's fucked up that this whole crowd is cool with, like, small children being gagged and chained up in front of them.
But they are only following what Amon is saying, so once he's out of the picture, they're normal civilians again.
Yes, they totally weren't complicit in literal kidnapping. Yeah, very strange. And meanwhile, we have the very uninteresting Asami, Iroh, Bolin stuff going on.
They really could not come up with a better, because the only I just could not believe that they just like walked through that electric fence and were just like, well, let's just go walk. Like, there's metallic poles, like something is gonna happen. Like, look at where you are. And they're only doing this so that Asami can have like a 6-second conversation with Hiroshi, and it's like, you could any other reason for this, because they like, all that happens is they get locked in the cage and then Naga comes and saves them. Which is like, Naga is another thing about this season where it's just like, why is she there? After 61 episodes of loving Appa, it's like, give Naga some, make me care about her.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's cute that she's there. Like, she's adorable. That's something that's worth it. But like you said, the pole moment, it's so dumb. Like, Asami, as she's walking up to them, is like, weird. This is weird. It's weird that there's nothing here. And then just, it's like, it should have been like, Bolin walks into them in front of them, and then they get, like, are surrounded and ambushed. Like, that at least makes sense. It's goofy. It's whatever. Not like, it's one of the presumably smartest people on the show, as far as we know, in a literal, like, is he an admiral, a general? Like the head general of the, like, most powerful army on Earth, like, just walk into an electric fence.
It's like, just have Bolin knock it over with earthbending. Just have him knock over one of them, and like, it just throw a stone. Like, anything will get shocked. Like, how is the head on assault their go-to plan?
Yeah, it's. But whatever. So we get Bolin and Iroh tied up, which is cute. That's fun. I don't even know. Like, there's really nothing that goes on here. The Naga can destroy metal. That's something. Good for her.
I do like the Asami moments with Hiroshi. Like, I'm glad that we got this stuff, like, further putting a nail in their relationship, just being like, no, like, Asami was never complicit in this. She completely disagrees with everything her dad was saying. Like, I love this stuff. And, like, this is good dialogue where she's like, which truly is, she's like, you don't even care about mom anymore. It's like, I really did enjoy that piece. The Asami piece of this episode was good. I stand by it.
Yeah, I agree. And it is really terrifying that he was literally about to murder her. Like, he was about to kill his own daughter. And it's good that she, like, recognizes that and, like, puts a stop to him, and she's the one who gets to do it. I agree. The Asami stuff, as always, we love. We live for her. And it's a shame that she is so reduced in so many ways. Yeah. So I feel like not much else. Like I said, Bolin barely in this episode.
That plot line really just ends. Like, they fight off the planes, and then we do Korra-Mako stuff.
Yeah, which is... fighting Amon, I just feel like, why would you introduce a character who can literally just stop? He can control entire bodies without even... he doesn't even have to move his body at all to do it. We saw this. And so it's weird that they would introduce someone of that caliber of power at all in the first place, but then second of all, he like takes forever to actually use it. It's weird, especially when we saw Yukon literally bloodbend like an entire room of people into submission. It just is weird.
Yeah, I mean, it, the entire fight is, I guess the end of the fight is not very well thought out. Like, I like having Korra figure out that she can airbend in the middle of this fight. Like, that's cool. But like it, I like I said before, having it happen Literally, Korra is on screen for maybe 10 seconds between when she loses her bending and when airbending comes back. And so, not good. Also, it's like, had Korra figured out airbending earlier, she would have just lost all her powers? Like, how does this work? How does it even work?
It doesn't make sense at all that, like, is there, like, are there special arteries that only airbending is for? Yes. Like, it really doesn't make...
Like, Amon was, like, bloodbending inside her and, like, turned off the valves for three of the bendings, but not the fourth one because she doesn't have it figured out yet.
I love the idea of this. Like, we get, like, a little zoom in of, like, little chibi Amon, like, turning the valves, and then he looks over and sees the airbending one, and he's like, eh, she won't figure
Nothing's
that
going
out.
Through that yet.
But sadly, we don't get a scene like that. That would have been cute. I mean, it is kind of a terrifying moment for sure. I think they do, like, the bloodbending still is very creepy. The sounds are still really gross.
Yeah.
That's a really effective. I don't know how I feel about this, like, Scooby-Doo chase, like, situation for, like, the final confrontation with the main villain. Like, I'm looking back at, like, the Avatar finales, and you've got the huge confrontation at the North Pole. You've got old Ba Sing Se with all these giant dramatic green crystals. You've got the huge field of earth pillars with Sozin's Comet, like all these huge, like, aesthetically, like, interesting set pieces from those finales. And we're, like, in, like a storage room. We're like in a broom closet for this one.
100%. It is weird to me that the final confrontation isn't happening, like, on the Pro Bending Arena platform, or, like, at Air Temple Island, or, like,
on the Aang statue, something.
On the Aang statue, yes. Give me a Sasuke retrieval arc. Or, like, on a roof. Like, this hallway is boring.
It is very... Yeah, it's like... we talked about this for Avatar, but, like, each finale has, like, a very specific color scheme that matched the element. It's, like... It's just... This episode's very brown. It's, like, we need some, like... I don't know, like, some great, vast, like, yellow, like, sunset, something to, like, really grab our attention, to, like, remind us what this whole season is supposed to be about. But it's, like, I feel like they forgot what it was about until the end. They're like, oh yeah, airbending is a thing.
There's so many blimps that they could have used. Like, there's just so many different, like, why Hiroshi probably has, like, a flying island that they could, like, have gotten up to. I just saw Black Widow, so that's probably part of why I'm thinking that. But, like, how is it this? This is like seventh episode fight sequence, not finale.
Yeah, finale. It's like, can you imagine a cool fight scene between, like, Amon gets exposed, and then at that point he's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna use all my water bending. That would be a cool fight scene to watch them, like, throw down, and then, like, Korra loses her bending. Like, that would be cool, but it's just like, we don't really get to see anything really.
Korra doesn't defeat him. Korra does not expose him. Korra does not, like, do anything except blow him out a window. And then he reveals himself, and then his brother murders them both. And so it's just like, no. Like, I don't care. Now airbending barely did anything. Like, she learned it for nothing except for to knock him out a window so that he could fall into an ocean and then randomly decide to end his ethos or whatever the word is. Like, it's nothing.
I mean, yeah, I'm thinking, like, literally a leaf in the wind. The moment when she, like, is dodging stuff in the Pro Bending Arena, and, like, that is a much more satisfying, like, resolution to, like, the teachings that Tenzin was, like, trying to instill in her. And then, like, none of that comes up here. Like we said, she just uses it to punch and kick. Like, that's all she uses airbending for, which is what she uses all the other bending for anyway. So it's, like, cool. And, like,
to have Tenzin not even really be a part of this is a mistake also. Like, I get that they're, like, building up to Korra and Mako saying that they love each other, which is another conversation. But, like, Tenzin also doesn't have much to do in this finale, and it's like, at the start of the show, you think that's, like, the primary relationship they're building around, and then at the end, it's like, he's running off with his family, which, like, obviously he has to, but it's, I don't, I don't know. Did they needed to like make it so that Korra and Tenzin had more stuff to do?
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's almost like if we're like working from this idea of like Korra loses her bending like earlier in the season, then it's like maybe in this episode all the airbenders do lose their bending. And like that's the main tension, is that now there's no airbenders left. And so then it's a lot more gratifying when Korra can bring bending back, because then it's like, phew, airbending is back, thank God.
True.
So it's like, it
feels bad that Tenzin's not there when Korra figures out she can airbend. Like, that is something that he should have seen.
Right, and it's like, by the time he does see her, she's like so depressed, and she's like, airbending isn't enough to be the Avatar. It's like, well, damn, fuck my drag, is what Tenzin's probably thinking. Like, okay, like, one more airbender is probably really awesome in his mind. But yeah, we really don't get to hear much, and they do get like that little, he calls her Avatar Korra, which is, I mean, that's cool, I guess. But it's like, that's like all he says to her at the end. Like, we've talked about this before off the pod, but it's like, that scene with Mako needed to be replaced with the scene with Tenzin, where it's like a scene where they can like really talk about like everything that's happened to them over the course of the book, and like what Korra has learned, and like she saw his dad. Like, that's cool too. Like, these are things that they should have addressed instead of forcing this very bad relationship in our faces.
Yeah. This whole thing just needed to be redone. Like, I felt like there are so many episodes that could be cut out and meandered into plot lines that I don't care about and didn't serve any narrative. And had they been used to spread this finale out into 4 or 5 episodes, that like it could have been, like it would have been so much stronger and better. But they decided to do a 3 to 4 episode pro bending arc that has nothing truly doesn't carry over into the back half of the season at all. We wasted so much time finding out about Amon's backstory, which like doesn't matter. And like I just feel like there's now I can't even remember distinct episodes. Like, Korra got kidnapped, but then it's like, what, everything needed to be redone, and I really am not here for any of it. But we are in the North Pole now, and Katara is there, which is cool. But it's like, did they really fly all of them? Why is Lin here? Just literally just so that she can have her bending replaced. Also, it's like, did they put all those boulders there so that Lin could prove that she would be able to earthbend immediately after getting the bending back? Like, that was, it didn't make any sense. Just bad, everything, like I said at the beginning, everything bad.
Yeah, I will say there's something I did like, or it's, I guess it's just like sort of a character moment for Korra here, where she like tells Mako to like leave because she's
love
not the
that.
Yeah. Not for the, I mean, I do love that, just in general, the idea of Korra like not wanting Mako around. But I do also, it like just really speaks to the idea of like, she doesn't even see herself as worthy of like friendship at this point. Like, it, that she's like, that's how low she feels without bending. But again, this feels like a very weird, even though like I appreciate that and it's like that really like hit for me, it still is like, okay, but this is the last episode and then literally like the last 3 minutes of the episode of like the finale. Like, and our character has not progressed since the beginning, the first episode, like, because this is how she would have reacted like at the beginning of the season too. Like, nothing about her has really changed other than airbending now.
Yeah. And Tenzin has that line that I referenced in your intro where he's like, it's going to take her time to accept what has happened. But it doesn't, because she immediately gets her abilities back and never has to reflect on it.
No, she doesn't have to accept anything. She gets to see Aang because she is sad. Like,
literally, yeah. Where did that even come from? Like, and like, she didn't learn anything. She didn't accept her place in the world. She literally just got everything back and mastered the Avatar State at the same time. To go back, I do like, there's one thing about Mako's episode that I did like. I did appreciate, like, because in episode 2, when she meets Mako, he doesn't pay attention to her until he figures out that she's the Avatar. And I do like that there's this moment in the finale where he's like, I don't care if you're not the Avatar anymore. Like, I love you, not your place in the world, which is good.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that, like, Mako weirdly has had the most growth of any of these characters somehow. Which is, that's not good. Yeah, it's tough. Tough look for everyone involved. I don't know. Airbender kids are cute, but they're barely here. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on this episode before we, I guess, talk spoilers, I guess?
Like, okay, last thing, Tarlok and Amon on the boat. Like, we
Gruesome.
see, truly horrifying. Plus, while I was going into the episode to take that screenshot for Twitter, I kept seeing, like, it kept getting in my way of the screenshot because every time I would hit 10 seconds forward, 10 seconds back, the, like, TV Y7 thing comes up on the screen. And I'm like, this episode is rated TV Y7? A brother killing himself and his brother at the same time? Even for villainy, like, that is horrific. And it's like, where are they even going? Like, what is the plan? Where are they, what is happening? And why is this the resolution if they're just gonna blow each other up? Like, and why did Amon take Tarlok captive? And then when his plan is, like, somehow thrown off, he, like, goes and takes him out of the cage. But it's like, why he do that? And I think that of, like, even the, like, the unfortunate thing is that the perfect narrative finish for Amon is he loses his bending. But it's like they can't do that because that's what happened to the Fire Lord. So we get to this weird spot where we don't know how to wrap things up with him, and they decide that he's now that, like we discussed, he's now somehow out of power because of reasons and unforced errors. And then he goes to rescue his brother, and it's like, does Tarlok really think that the best thing he can do in this situation is to blow both of them up? Where did that come from? And, like, because he had all these happy memories with his brother, and those are undiscussed. And it's just like, how, who, why is this happening?
Right, and it's, yeah, I don't think it's like, why does Tarlok want to die? Like, that doesn't make sense, really. And it's like, I don't know, it almost feels like you said, if, like, Amon needs his bending taken away, so, like, really, like, wrap that up, there's a bloodbender right there who has seen this technique performed before and could maybe do it on someone else, but it's like,
But Tarlok doesn't have his bending anymore.
oh, doy, yeah, so that's
They,
why.
yeah.
It's like, oh, but so then, yeah, I guess, I don't know, they could just go live on an island together.
But, like, if Tarlok hates his brother, he's with his brother. Like, he could, no matter where they go, he can turn him in. But and it doesn't, why is he Amon now trying to bring his brother into the fold? Like, this would only make sense if they had been working together this whole season, but as we know, they were not.
They're actively working against each other,
Right.
actually.
But
So.
if he had kidnapped Tarlok as, like, a trick to, like, make people think that they're not working together, this would make sense. But that's not what happened.
No, yeah, it's just like, I don't know. And it is very stark in comparison to literally the last finale we saw, where the whole idea was like killing was not the answer. But I guess since it's another villain killing another villain, it's whatever. it just, yeah, it just feels like there's no reason for them to die, honestly. Like, they could have just, like, ridden off on a boat, and that could have been it, honestly. I don't know.
Yeah, Tarlok never even really got his comeuppance from kidnapping the Avatar. Like, I know that Amon kidnapped him and placed him in custody, but it's like, no good guy ever did anything about it. Like, he just, like, he kidnapped the Avatar, he was kidnapped himself, and then he killed himself. Is this good? I would say that's not good storytelling.
No, I yeah, weird, very weird ending for a villain who, like, who knows? Motives were very unclear the whole time. Very, I don't know, just feels like a sketch of an idea of a character, and that's it.
We never learned what made Amon want to take away bending. We never learned the central piece of his play, like, his self. We learned that he wanted everybody to be treated equally, and eventually that shifted into all, like, I guess it's because, like, his, no, because his dad wasn't even a bender by the time he was alive. So it's like, how, where did this even come from? We literally never learned.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like the motivation as a child should not have been he wanted everyone to be equal. It's that he hated bending and resented bending and wished he didn't have bending anymore. And like, that makes more sense, because then he's like, bending in general is bad. So that makes sense why he would want to take it away. Not this nebulous idea of everyone should be equal and that means taking away bending.
That's all my thoughts on Korra book one.
Korra book one. Yeah, I don't know. Do you want to give like a general, like, these are our thoughts on book one of Korra?
I feel like I've made myself very clear.
Yes. traditionally, this is my, I've never been a big fan of book one of Korra. I will say there were a few episodes there that I would stand by still that I think were fun. I had fun watching them. I think especially the pilot is very strong still. I think that work, like the world building is still good. The animation has been fantastic in every episode. There needed to be more writers in that room.
I would say that the first four episodes are good, and then the back eight episodes are indefensible.
Yeah, I used to be someone who would say, oh, you know, everything up to the bloodbending reveal is fine. But I feel like, it's just tough once we get it. I feel like pro bending does not do anything. It used to be like, ooh, haha, fun, like, whatever. And now, like, watching out now, it's just like, it does not hold up for me at all. And like you said, it's so unrelated to anything that else that goes on. It just feels like padding.
If there had been something where the other pro bending teams who, like, hated the Fire Ferrets came and stood by their side in the final confrontation against all of the non-bender something, any, like, there's just so many ways it could have been part of the plot, and then it's truly just a subplot that they had included for some reason just unknown to me.
We're putting that right at the bottom of the rankings of the books so far.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is that I remember book two being worse. That's feeding into my annoyance. But luckily we have months before we have to take that on.
Okay. And I don't know. I was going to suggest maybe we could do two at a time just to get it out of the way faster. I don't know. There's I just don't know how to, I just need to drag you through book two with me to get to the other side.
I don't need to do two at a time. Like, I would like to stick to the format and do one, or unless it's a double episode, and then we can do two. And I will comfortably do that, but I don't think that my positivity shield is going to hold up. And I'm okay with that. But as I referenced, not happening for several months because Survivor is almost back.
Yes. So exciting. I can't wait to see, I don't know, literally 9 new women that we get to just idolize.
And potentially gay men.
Maybe.
Possibly.
could be. A himbo or two that, you know, doesn't make it far. That's what we
stand a merge boot. Yeah, so this will be, for a bit, probably the final Bitter Jurors broadcast until we get the official cast reveal of season 41. No subtitle, standing that one. And we, Derek and I, will be back to talk about the cast.
We will, yes. We'll be bringing back some people who maybe haven't been on in a while, since it's weird. You would think that everyone who's watched Survivor has also watched Avatar The Last Airbender, but that seems to not be the case. So,
and for, like, I would say like half of people that's true, but there are some friendly faces who we haven't been able to talk to in a while that I'm looking forward to get back to. Hopefully some Survivor contestants on the pod this season, not more Survivor contestants, obviously. But some new ones, maybe. That'd be so fun. But I'm already really excited about Survivor being back. I just have a pep in my step considering it after the last couple months, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, same. It feels like coming home, baby. It's been so long. But do you want to remind everyone where they can find you on social media in the meantime?
Hundo P, at Sam Stanish, Instagram, Twitter, at Word on the Straits, STR8S, Instagram, Twitter. You can follow this podcast at Bitter Drurs Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
Hell yeah. You can find me at Reindeerx on Twitter. And meanwhile, I still will be going strong with my friend Christine Palin over on the Shadowplay Gaze, where we talk about the anime Revolutionary Girl Utena. We're just getting started. We're like 10 episodes in now, something like that. And it's only keeps getting better from there, baby. So if you want some positivity, just go over there and listen to it. Don't even have to watch the show. Just listen to two nerdy people talk about a gay anime from the 90s.
That's so great. I'm almost caught up on the other part. I was just like saving all of the Shadowplay Gaze episodes until I was done catching up on my other podcast, because I was a month behind, but I'm almost done, and then I'm gonna start catching up on your guys' show and watching Utena for the first time, hopefully guest on the show at some point. And I'm excited about that too. There's so many exciting things in the world when you're not forced to watch Legend of Korra.
I don't know, do we want to do like a spoiler look ahead section, or are you good?
I did feel like it's unnecessary due to several reasons. Like, this episode doesn't really make me need to discuss anything else that happens in the series, and you know, that can be taken as whoever you can analyze that thought however necessary.
Yes. I agree. I feel like we've really plumbed the depths of Legend, book one of Legend of Korra this season. I feel like we've really, I don't know, nailed down what does not work about this season and some of the things that did work. And I feel satisfied having done that. Definitely a different sort of feeling for sure from watching Avatar. I'm still glad. And I still, there's still little thinkings I like from book one.
Definitely. And like I said, like going through Avatar episode by episode every week really just made me appreciate it so much more. And now watching Legend of Korra episode by episode has just further just made me so much more familiar with why I don't like this season. That's been fun. I'm excited to get back to Survivor.
Hell yeah. Okay, so thank you again for listening. Thank you, Sam, for going on this very torturous journey near the end. But we made it. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about seeing all those avatars. So on.
Thoughts on that are that why were there two male avatars next to Yang Chen? Where's the lady firebending avatar? I don't like it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I'm done. We've been talking about outros for a year and a half, over a year and a half, and nothing has really come together for us, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the Bitter Drurs brand, I think. You know, got to end on a whimper.
Much like Legend of Korra Book 1. Okay, bye.
Bye.